Chapter 8. Walking back towards the school after lunch, Ron felt the thick, hard blade of the butcher knife against his chest. He wasn't sure that he was going to need it, but he was sure that if it came down to anything, he wanted to have the biggest knife. His nervousness caused sweat to trickle down his back with an unamusing tickle. His friends were waiting in a loose circle at the corner. "You got anything?" said Kenny Bonnet. "Yeah," said Ron. He slid the blade from under his jacket and showed it to the other guys. There were the Zarrow brothers, Jimmy Lucas, Kenny Bonnet, and him. They stared down Grafton Avenue and waited for the kids from Broadway Junior High, who had been there before lunch, making dirty comments to some of the girls that Ron and his friends went to school with. There had been words and a stare down, but when they saw Mr. Boyden come into the playground, the Broadway guys said, "After lunch, jerk-offs. We'll see you then. Make you eat shit." They'd see who was going to be eating shit now. The Zarrows each had a pocket knife. Kenny Bonnet had an actual switchblade that he could snap open in one quick motion. Ron felt important. Broadway showed just like they said. They were black. They walked with a hop in their steps. They fanned out as they approached. Ron stood in the center, next to Kenny. "You motherfuckers got some sweet pussy in this school. Too good for your little dicks. They told us they want to see what it's like to meet somebody who can make them get on their backs and want to spread their legs." "Yeah, nigger," said Kenny. "Show us what you got. We'll cut it right off. Then you'll learn that you should be leaving the white girls alone. Stay with your own frizzy-headed dirty pigs." Fist clenched, eyes darkened. Ron opened his jacket, pulled out the butcher knife. The eyes of the boy, glaring a few yards away from him, got saucer big. Ron held it down low, blade pointed out. He prepared to rush in, swinging it and slashing at anybody that came close to him. But in a minute, one of the black kids pointed over Ron's shoulder, and the rest of the Broadway group froze, and then turned, and ran. Ron was too focused, and he surely wasn't going to fall for that "look who's in back of you" trick. Then he heard Kenny say, "Cops!" The boys scattered and ran through the playground as the two cars raced down the street and pulled up in front of the gate. Ron ran through the playground and out the other side. There was a chain-link fence that was lined with high bushes just on the other side. He stopped, stooped down, slid the knife through an opening in the fence until he couldn't see it anymore. The kids had scattered. He couldn't see any of his friends now. He was panting and sweating. He heard the bell ring. He could go inside through this side door. No one had seen him. He was safe. The afternoon in Mrs. Kennedy's 6A class got off to a slow start. Ron looked around. Jimmy Lucas was in his seat, but he had his head down. Didn't turn around to look at Ron, only glanced at the back of Jimmy's head, and then looked away. The Zarrow brothers were in another class, but he didn't see Kenny anywhere. His empty seat glared like an accusation. Ron was worried, but he knew that Kenny was a tough kid, who played hooky a lot. It wouldn't be unusual if Kenny just took off, didn't come back to school that day. It was probably the smart thing to do. It was what Ron should have done. He looked over at Valerie Scarlatti, and she smiled at him. Ron smiled back. Valerie knew what was going on. She had been one of the insulted girls. She was one of the girls that Ron was defending. The least she could do was smile for him. There was a knock at Mrs. Kennedy's door. She turned, looked down the aisle, nodded her head, made eye contact with Ron as she nodded her head. Ron felt his body go tighter. He had an urge to clasp his hand against the edge of his desk, like he was taught to do when he was being punished. He fought the urge. Nothing had happened. He hadn't done anything. He tried to look innocent. Then he saw Mrs. Kennedy pointing to him and crook her index finger, motioning him to come to the front of the room. He got up slowly. "Ronald, you're wanted in the main office," said Mrs. Kennedy. There was a worried look on her face. She was Ron's favorite teacher since third grade. She wanted to skip him a half year because of his reading ability and his vocabulary. He had helped her get the Y on his library card that allowed him to borrow books from the adult library, as long as certain books were off limits. She told him that she couldn't skip him because his asthma caused him to be absent too many days. She didn't know that some of the asthma days were times when his mother kept him at home to help her go downtown and look for better jobs than waitressing. Ron walked down the two flights of stairs to the main office. He could just play dumb. He didn't know anything about anything. He'd gone home for lunch and come back to school like always. He was pretty sure that he could get away with it. "Ronald," said the principal's secretary, "there's a call from you from home. It's a little unusual, but I'm going to let you take it. But I do have to listen in on this line." "Sure," said Ron. He picked up the phone. Marjorie Tuck said, "Ronald, did you take a knife from the kitchen drawer at lunchtime?" Ron closed his eyes. Busted by his own mother? How could she have possibly figured it out so fast? "Yes, Mom, I did." Marjorie's voice was choked. "Why?" she managed to say. "For protection," said Ron, almost defiantly. Then the door of the principal's office opened, and Ron saw the two policemen sitting there. They were listening, too. Kenny Bonnet was in the corner of the principal's office. He looked like he was crying. The secretary took the phone away from Ron's ear. Ralph Latimer's deep voice said, "Come in here, Ronald." Ron felt himself moving towards the door at the same time that he wanted to turn and run. He could get past the secretary. He could be unstoppable. The cops were smiling. "Where's the knife now, Ron?" said Principal Latimer. "I hid it," said Ron. One of the detectives stood up. "I'll go with you," he said. "Show me where it is." Kenny was looking at the wall. Ron thought that he looked like a little boy who wasn't so tough after all. Ron took the cop to the spot in the chain-link fence and pointed. "In there," he said. "Get it for me," said the cop. Ron crouched down and worked it out from in between the links of the fence, thinking they would never have found it. They would never have known to look there. Why did his mother have to call? He handed the knife over to the detective, who whistled as he saw it. "You know you're in big trouble, right?" "I didn't do anything," protested Ron. "Let me show you something, kid. The law says that anything with a blade more than 4 fingers long is illegal to carry." He laid 4 fingers against the base of the blade. It extended out at least 6 more fingers beyond the detective's hand. Ron stared at it. "Still think that you didn't do anything wrong?" Ron shook his head. "Do you know where Jamesburg is, kid?" Ron shook his head again. "Who else was with you?" Ron didn't answer. "Did anyone have brass knuckles?" Ron thought he knew what brass knuckles were, but he wasn't sure. He shook his head. "You really think that your mother needs this aggravation from you?" said the detective in a gruff, harsh whisper. It was then that Ron began to cry. Back at their apartment, Marjorie had said little to Ron. She was terrified. The cops had been noncommittal about whether or not there was a way that he could avoid charges. One thing was for certain, something had to be done. He couldn't just walk away from this. Denny Galveston was a cop that Marjorie knew. He was a good guy. When he got free coffee, he left her a tip. Some of your son's friends are on a bad path, Margie. We're going to slam them before this gets any worse. Your boy hasn't been in trouble before. But Jesus, he had a butcher knife. Marjorie winced and then she cried. Isn't there something that we can do? I need him, Denny. He's all that I have. Maybe it would be better to straighten him out now. 6 months in Jamesburg, and he would think twice about ever doing something like this again. Marjorie looked into his eyes with her own large hazel eyes. 6 months in there, and he might never be the same. He's a good boy. Can't we do something? No promises, but I'll see what I can do. I'll stop by the diner tomorrow or the next day, as soon as I know something. Marjorie made two phone calls. The first was to Ron's father. The second was to Mechanics Overall. She was convinced that what Ron needed was a man to talk to. It was about time that she brought her ex-husband into this, and Rocky was someone that she always went to see when she didn't know what to do. I can stop over after work, said Rocky. But do you really think that Ron will listen to anything that I say? I'll try anything, said Marjorie. Rocky, they're talking about sending him away. I can't bear the thought of him being in a place like that. It'll kill me. She had difficulty contacting Harry. He was on the road, and his boss said that he would get a message to him to call as soon as he called in. Marjorie explained that it was about Ron and that it wasn't good news. Ron was sitting at the kitchenette table in the living room, looking down at the pattern on the tabletop, when Rocky arrived. He didn't look up. Ron, looks like you've gotten yourself into a bit of a scrape. Ron didn't answer. Rocky and Marjorie exchanged a look. You know enough to answer when someone is talking to you, Ronald, said Marjorie. Rocky is here to try to help you. I thought he promised never to see us again, said Ron, looking only at his mother. Ron, sometimes adults say things because they have to say them. Doesn't mean that they believe them, said Rocky. So, basically, you're just a liar, right? Said Ron. There was a silence, and then Marjorie said, I'm going across the street to talk with John Pappas. Maybe he can do something. John Pappas was the boss. He liked Ron. He sometimes paid him a dollar to kill flies in the back section of the diner. Ron watched her leave, and then he watched Rocky move over to the table and sit down. He sat in the chair that he usually sat in when they all had dinner together. And Ron felt the hatred rise up in him and blot out his fear. What were you thinking? Said Rocky. Silence. Do you know what you were thinking? Yeah. I was thinking that that Negro kid looked a little Italian. And if I couldn't stab you, maybe I could stab him. He watched Rocky's face turn red with anger. He noted with satisfaction that it took Rocky a minute to compose himself. So you're just going to make smart-assed comments to me and make yourself feel better that way. Is that your plan? What about your mother? Ron felt the tears immediate rise to his eyes and threaten to fall. He bit off his words hard. You got no right to talk to me about hurting her. You didn't care what happened to her, what happened to me. Don't be here now trying to make up for it, because I hate you. You want to know what my plan is? My plan is to hate you until you die. My plan is to hate your daughter, to hate your sisters, and to hate your whole lying family." Ron stared at him. The tears were running out of his eyes now, and he wiped them with his sleeve. "I can't talk to you," said Rocky. "That's right. You can't," spit Ron. Quietly, Rocky left, and Ron looked up at the windows that were at the ground level and watched him walk across the street. Ron's dad wanted to speak with him alone. Harry was careful not to show any sense of pride about what Ron had done, but the fact that he was standing up to the niggers was pleasing to him. He loaded Ron into his car and they went for a ride. It was where they had their best talks because Harry had an excuse for not making eye contact. Ron never seemed to notice, and the passing scenery allowed Harry to open up more easily. "Ronald, it was stupid of you to get caught. If you're gonna get caught doing these things, you're better off not to do them. And since you seem to get caught as often as you get away with anything, maybe you're better off not doing them." "Dad, I didn't get caught. I stashed the knife. They never would have found it. Mom came home and saw it was missing from the kitchen drawer and called the school." Harry shook his head back and forth. "And you believe that's what happened?" "What do you mean?" "I mean, you believe that your mother came home and for some strange reason immediately checked the kitchen drawer and saw that the knife was missing?" Ron stared out the window. He felt stupid because what his father said had just sounded stupid. And he was more stupid because he didn't know what the real answer was. "Your friend Kenny ratted you out," said Harry. "He gave your name to the police, and they called your mother, and she pretended to call the school." Harry glanced at Ron and saw that his son was sitting there with his mouth hanging open. Harry knew that the whole thing was a tough lesson, and that it might even get tougher still, but he believed that his son would learn. "Any time that you trust somebody, Ron, you leave yourself open. You need to learn to leave yourself open less often." "How do I do that, Dad?" "You keep your mouth shut and keep things to yourself. You don't ever brag about anything. Bragging leaves you open. You let the other guy brag, and you listen, and you size up where he is weak from his bragging." "I don't know how to do that." "I know that you don't," said Harry. "That's why I'm telling you that you aren't cut out to do the kind of thing that you're doing. Even now, you don't know what to do you?" "No," said Ron quietly. Harry debated telling his son that the next thing to do was to kick the shit out of Kenny and decided that it wasn't a good idea. "When we get back to your apartment, tell your mother that I told you that you were too smart to be wasting your time with knives and gangs, and that you had a better future than that." "Okay," said Ron. "Don't tell her about the rest of what we talked about. It'll only upset her." "Okay." "Ron, it isn't a lie. You are too smart to be doing these things." "I don't feel very smart at all, Dad." When they got back home, Marjorie was smiling. "They're not pressing any charges," she said. "Ronald, you are going to Catholic school."